Thank you for tuning in to the seventh day of the second week of IGH 260, a bonus day. IGH 260 is a five-year-long study of the New Testament, brought to you by International Gospel Hour. We are working our way through each of the 260 chapters in the New Testament, studying one chapter each week. Today's broadcast, a bonus lesson, is week number two, lesson number five, continuing our study of the second chapter of Matthew's Gospel. We take up exactly where we left off at the end of our last broadcast. In Matthew chapter 2, verses 17 and 18, we encounter the third fulfillment text in Matthew's Gospel. This one cites Jeremiah chapter 31, verse 15. It reads, "A voice was heard in Ramah, lamentation, weeping, and great mourning. Rachel weeping for her children, refusing to be comforted, because they are no more." Jeremiah chapter 31, a remarkable chapter, accomplishes many things, both with reference to what would happen to physical Judah in the future, but also with reference to what would happen to spiritual Judah in the future. Physical Judah would return to the land and rebuild the city of Jerusalem and the temple. Spiritual Judah would receive a new covenant, one unlike that given by God through Moses at Sinai. They would become a new people, driven by what was written on their hearts. As part of the dynamic that exists between what Judah was physically and what they would become spiritually, Jeremiah references Rachel weeping for her children. Rachel, the mother of Joseph and Benjamin, died during Benjamin's birth. Though she died, and though her death brought mourning and sadness to her family, through her firstborn son Joseph, Israel's hope continued. Joseph would be the means by which Israel was delivered from the famine to come. Joseph would serve as the linchpin, connecting God's second covenant promise to Abraham, confirmed in Genesis 15, with the unfolding events in the early chapters of the book of Exodus. A quick side thought. Though it's not critical to understanding Matthew 2, it's worth noting that Rachel was buried near the town of Bethlehem. See Genesis chapter 35, verse 19. Likewise, the children of Israel returning from captivity were also moving away from a period of sorrow, the 70 years in Babylonian captivity. But the Lord saw to it that their sorrow worked an even greater reward when they returned to Judea. Rachel's death did not end Israel's hope, nor did Judah's captivity end their hope. And, as horribly tragic though it was, the slaughter of the innocents did not accomplish its primary objective. The born King of the Jews, Jesus, was not killed, and the ultimate hope and fulfillment of Israel was not lost. Not to diminish the horrors of Herod's actions, but rather to put them into perspective, consider this. According to Ezra chapter 2, verse 21, the people who returned to Bethlehem after the captivity numbered only 123. Given the nature of genealogical records, that number may have applied only to the number of men. Though a few centuries passed between the time of the Restoration and the birth of Jesus, nothing that we know indicates that Bethlehem ever grew substantially in population. Thus, scholars estimate, and we must emphasize the word estimate, that Herod's murder of the young boys in and around Bethlehem amounted to no more than 30, and maybe as few as 10. One murdered child, that's horrible. 10 or 30, much more so. We do not want to diminish Herod's sins, but nor do we want to falsely portray them as if he ordered the execution of hundreds or thousands of little boys. After Herod died, the angel, as stated earlier in Matthew chapter 2, verse 13, the angel told Joseph that he could return with his family to Israel. Joseph did as he was instructed. At some point, either en route or upon entering the land of Israel, Joseph learned that Archelaus, Herod's son, had replaced his father, thus discouraging Joseph from returning to that part of Palestine. Archelaus, as it would turn out, was every bit as evil as was his father, even worse. Marshak notes, in Erdman's Dictionary of Early Judaism, that Archelaus's short reign was a disaster from the beginning. His cruelty and oppressive measures enraged his subjects, and in 6 CE, Augustus banished him to Vienne in Gaul. For the fifth time in the first two chapters of Matthew, someone was guided by means of a dream. Joseph was told in a dream not to fear taking Mary as his wife, for the child within her was conceived by the Spirit, Matthew 1:20. The Magi were warned in a dream not to return home the same way they came, chapter 2, verse 12. In the following verse, Matthew 2:13, Joseph was instructed to go to Egypt in a dream. In chapter 2, verse 19 and following, the angel told Joseph that it was safe to leave Egypt. And now, the fifth time, in Matthew 2, verse 22, warned again by God in a dream, Joseph and family traveled to Galilee, the northernmost province in Palestine. More than an interesting sidelight, it's important to note that the geographic places mentioned in Matthew to this point, Bethlehem, Egypt, Judea, Galilee, and Nazareth, are more than incidental points of reference along the way. Rather, these moves from place to place, along with the coincident dreams revealing the path that either Joseph or the Magi were to take, they indicate that each move was, as we noted earlier, directed by God. Furthermore, later in Jesus' life, challenges were made to his messianic claim. How could someone who came out of Galilee be the Messiah? See John 7, verse 41 and John 7, verse 52. Or, how could someone who was from Nazareth be the Messiah? John chapter 1, verse 46. Matthew's account traces when and where Jesus moved throughout his early life, and clearly states where he was born, Bethlehem, and why he grew up in the city of Nazareth. Coupled with Luke's record of the why Joseph and Mary traveled to Bethlehem, ample proof exists to show Jesus' fulfillment of both the prophetic Old Testament birthplace and his adolescent residences, that is, Bethlehem and Nazareth. The final verse of Matthew chapter 2, for the fourth time in the first two chapters of Matthew, speaks of another First Testament fulfillment. And he came and dwelt in a city called Nazareth, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by the prophets, he shall be called a Nazarene. This fourth fulfillment differs from the prior three. Rather than citing a prophet like Isaiah, chapter 1, verses 22 and 23, or Hosea, chapter 2, verse 15, or Jeremiah, chapter 2, verses 17 and 18, Matthew chapter 2, verse 23, refers to a general sense of what the prophets taught concerning the Messiah. Each of the first three identified a specific prophet by name. Here, in Matthew 2, 23, Matthew wrote that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by the prophets. He did not call attention to a specific prophet by name. Nor did Matthew reference a passage where some Old Testament prophet alluded to this prediction, either orally or in writing. Though we often and rightly associate the term Nazarene with someone who was from or a resident of the town of Nazareth, there are two additional thoughts that we might want to consider. The meaning of the root from which these two words, names or places, comes from, Nasar, meaning branch, appears repeatedly in the First Testament. For example, Isaiah chapter 11, verse 1 says, "There shall come forth a rod from the stem of Jesse, and a branch shall grow out of his roots." The second thought, the city of Nazareth was often used in an informal and negative way to refer to someone from a less than desirable area. That thought comes across in Nathanael's question in John 1, 46. And Nathanael said to him, "Can anything good come out of Nazareth?" That sort of negative view of Nazareth and those who lived there or were from there appears to be consistent with the general tenor of the messianic prophecies depicting Christ as despised and rejected. Thanks so much for joining us for the first 2 weeks of our study, IGH 260. Next up, week 3, Matthew chapter 3. A reminder as we close, if you would like to receive our free 30-lesson series, Studies in the Bible, we encourage you to call this toll-free number, 1-855-IGH-6988, or you can use the contact form at our website, internationalgospelhour.com. You can also message us at facebook.com/International Gospel Hour. Just leave your contact information, especially your name and mailing address, and we will get those lessons to you right away. We hope that you can join us as we study God's Word together in our next broadcast.